This program is brought to you by PrideNZ.com.
So, Graham Kane, I'm a counselling psychologist from Melbourne, Victoria, Australia. The OutGames conference, I initially enrolled as a runner, and so I ran that on Sunday and got a silver in the 5K, so very happy about that. In terms of the conference, one of my roles as a counselling psychologist is I'm the secretary for the Gay and Lesbian Issues in Psychology Interest Group for Australian Psychological Society over in Australia. And I submitted two papers. So the two papers I submitted, one is Gay Men Are More Than Their Bodies, and the other is looking at ethical guidelines for trans individuals.
So should we take the first paper first? What's that about?
The first paper is, how does succinctly say it? It's a look at the two dominant paradigms that typically represent gay men and research gay men. And one is that gay men are obsessed with being thin and youthful, and the other is that they're obsessed with being muscular and trim. And when you look at the research, certainly there are individuals that will have that obsession, but not necessarily as widely distributed as some people claim. And so what I did is look at the evidence and start to get a sense that the research, and there's quite a lot over the last 25 years, wasn't as robust as it should be. And so what I did was interrogate the research and have written a couple of articles that have been published. And so I'm presenting on some of my research. And I'm a practitioner, so I come in from an angle of someone who sees a couple hundred people a year as a clinician, and looking at the and challenging some of the paradigms. So I'm challenging the thin and the muscular paradigm. Not to say that men aren't interested in their bodies. It's just that we're more than our bodies, which is the title of the paper.
So as a clinician and seeing 200 or 300 people a year, what are the main issues that are coming up for those people?
It's a broad range. The number one is always going to be relationships. It's going to be who you are in relationship to your family, your friends, and as well as work. So the number one issue is relationships that I find. And you can kind of branch out from that. Some people might have some issues with anxiety or depression. Certainly got, the typical coming out issues, or, you get the odd body image issue as well. So the issues are diverse, but it's all about who I am and where do I exist in this world.
Is that any different from a straight mainstream group of people coming to a counsellor?
What I found, and I'm 45 and I've been doing this, coming up to my second decade, and I have a significant heterosexual straight population, and the issues are very much the same. One of my jokes is the icing may look different, but the cake's still the same underneath. That's kind of one of my little catchphrases that I made up for this week to annoy my partner with. So, every time we'll try to talk about some unique or distinct thing, I'll turn around and say, well, the icing may be different, but the cake's still the same. So, heterosexuals have the same thing in terms of fidelity in relationships that they're no longer going to be with, or how do you negotiate that? How do you negotiate separation? How do you manage your careers and juggle all those things? They're no different from same-sex attracted couples or opposite-sex attracted couples.
So in Australia now, what do you think the biggest human rights issues are for queer communities?
There's no number. Look, I think certainly marriage and kids. But again, I always to challenge myself, is that because I'm middle-aged? And so as a middle-aged man, mine's always, who's middle class and is very comfortable. He's got the house, got the partner. My next issues are marriage and kids. So do I see that through that particular lens? And I would suggest yes. Actually, I want to be very topical here. Do you know what I think? One of the biggest issues for all of us, how do we actually act out diversity? Because we talk about it, and it's on the radio, it's in our media, but in terms of when we start to make jokes, we go back to bias and stereotypes. And so when someone will say, well, typical lesbians are pragmatic, all the gays are very creative. And I want to kind of challenge those stereotypes because I can't shop for shit. You know, when I go out and buy clothes, I have no idea. You know, I'm not, and I have power tools. So what am I, a closet lesbian or something? So in terms of if I was to say from our community, the issue is to embrace diversity and live it and breathe it and walk it rather than just give it lip service. So that's my challenge to us in terms of actually walking and breathing and living diversity as we proclaim we are.
And so then my challenge to you would be, how do you do that personally?
How do I do that personally? Oh, good. As in me individually, personally, I have a very robust relationship with a partner that keeps me honest as well as friends. I think that's how you actually do it, so that when you start to believe your own rubbish, you know, someone will come along and kind of like, you know, say, excuse me, there are some inconsistencies in your attitude and opinion on what you're actually doing. And it's always really healthy to not only be a deliverer of feedback, but also to receive it. And I think in terms of one of the things I always work hard at, you know, as a psychologist, I'm giving people my professional opinion. It's always nice when someone gives you their personal opinion back. And that's the hard thing to actually integrate it, to actually take on board when someone actually gives you a challenge back that you're inconsistent.
Is it hard as a psychologist to actually switch off from that kind of whole observational kind of counselling role?
I think, look, young psychologists are psychologists every breathing second of their lives. I think as you get older, you get a bit fatigued and a little bit disinterested at always looking at people. So, you know, I think everyone has a capacity to make interpretations of themselves and each other. Mine's just scientifically based. And we're not always interpreting or assessing other people. However, how easy is it? I think it's pretty easy, unless it's pretty much in your face and pretty obvious or so.
Do you find there is any difference between a straight group of people and a queer group of people in terms of accessing health services, particularly like, say, mental health services?
I think it's always bang for buck. Like the bigger cities, you're going to have more options, and you'll have those that want more anonymity. You want those that want gay, lesbian, transgender identified. I think the smaller cities, people are going to struggle with that. So in Melbourne, where I live, you know, people from Geelong and rural Victoria will come up to the gay identified, but then the difficulty with that is that it can take, you know, 4 to 8 weeks to get an appointment. So it's all those kind of challenges and obstacles as well as opportunities. The segue into my second presentation. Very good. I'm looking at proposing ethical guidelines for Australian psychologists, because there's one at the moment on working with gay, lesbian, bisexual clients, which basically means that you need to do so in a respectful, competent manner if you're a psychologist. And so that, in a sense, sets a standard. And if you don't do so, that there could be some consequences for you. I'm endeavouring to advocate for a transgender guidelines to be recognised and legitimised within Australia, so that, you know, it's going to be a challenge and an uphill battle, so that to get it endorsed at that high level, such that all 27,000 psychologists need to be attentive to those particular issues. So in terms of mental health, working with an individual practitioner and looking at psychologists, it's always good to kind of set the bar, and always constantly reviewing and setting that bar higher and higher. So that's it in the summary.
I'm interested to know, why will it be a challenge? Why is it so difficult to get that passed?
In terms of vulnerable groups, it's just critical mass. It's like anything. The more you have, the more you're going to be heard. So that in terms of gay, lesbians and bisexuals in Australia, given the critical mass, they can turn around and say, well, this is our expectations, this is what we want. In terms of transgender being a vulnerable group, I think one of the speakers this morning was talking about a vulnerable group within a vulnerable group, etc. The challenges with that is that when you're dealing with a smaller population, it's lower on the agenda. It's lower on the priorities, and where things are always being prioritized, how do you actually say, yes, this is only a small group of people, but it's still important? And that's the challenge. So, like, how many psychologists in Australia are going to be providing psychological services to trans clients? I don't know what that number is. So that's part of the challenge, to say that, to legitimise it, to say that this is important. That's the challenge.
Now, I've been using the word queer all the way over the last couple of days, but what words would you use?
For myself? Well, for myself, I'd say a gay man, but when working with clients, terminology is huge, and that's one of the things that I've done in both the ethical guidelines, one that's actually endorsed and the other that I'm putting forward, and that is that you need to check with the person the terminology that they're comfortable with. You may have someone that has an incredible resistance to that kind of terminology, or I would say to you as a 45-year-old man, the gay aspect probably represents 5% of who I am. For probably when I was about 18, 19, it was probably 90. So in terms of where people are in their life, where they are culturally, socially, politically, economically, they're going to have different ways of expressing who they are. So some, I see myself more as a partner and a psychologist than necessarily a gay man. They would have a higher priority, as well as an owner of a very demanding dog. So in terms of being a very responsible pet owner, that sort of features hugely in my life, because every afternoon I need to walk that particular creature.
So this conference, what do you want to get out of it?
I suppose a couple of things. I've got what I wanted. The opening was just sensational, you know, in terms of the both to be entertained, to be challenged, to be excited, and to be... I'm speechless, so that kind of gives you some sort of idea of just how it met those needs to at a conference. You know, conferences, you don't want necessarily like everything you hear or see, but the opening was it was warm, it was intelligent, it was as cheeky as all hell. Some of the presenters were hysterical, they had me in fits, but it was also poignant, and the pathos and the diversity, not only of the presenters and their issues, but also the crowd. So, you know, I'm happy I got what I wanted. So I know for some other people it's about connections with a whole range of people. As a psychologist, I don't necessarily go to human rights conferences, so this is a first for me. And yesterday I sat in a workers' rights. Now I'm not a unionised member of any workforce, so it was quite a pleasure to sit in there and go, oh, okay, I'm, you know, learning. All right, that's it in a nutshell. Learning. How's that?
That's great. If we were to look 30 years ahead and somebody's listening back to this as an archival recording, what would you like to say to them?
How far have we advanced? Have we gotten any further? How do we manage our domestic, petty domestic concerns, and have we gotten over that, and how inclusive and diverse are we? Have we moved from lip service to actually walking the talk? There's some of the reflections I'd ask people to consider.